Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here. This is just a short intro to this week's episode. The main part of the pod is my conversation with Sean Carroll about all of the latest J2 action, the round 27 games from the weekend. And Magic Mike Innes is back with the J3 segment, JTalk Short Corner, as well. He has all the latest J3 results after their summer break coming up too. Before you listen to my chat with Sean though, I just wanted to mention some of the rearranged J2 games from last midweek that I didn't talk about with Sean in our conversation. So, last midweek in J2, there was a rearranged game from round 24 where Nagasaki picked up a fairly routine 2-0 win away at struggling Kanazawa. Nagasaki were up and running in just the fourth minute in this match with a nice individual goal from Takumi Nagara. And it was nearly 2-0 before the 10th minute, but a Kanazawa defender made a good block on the goal line to prevent a second goal for Nagasaki. In the Kanazawa goal, there was a rare start for Yuto Shirai, and he made some good saves from Seiya Maikuma and Edgar Jr. In each half. The goal that sealed the points came in the 83rd minute, though, and it was an absolute cracker from Nagasaki's young defender Hijiri Kato. He cut inside from the left-back position and sent a thunderbolt past Shirai. So it finished Kanazawa 0, Nagasaki 2. The only downside for Nagasaki, really, was an injury for their right-sided attacker, Wellington Rato. He had to go off injured in the 18th minute, and Hijiri Kato was his replacement. So I'm not sure about the extent of Wellington Rato's injury yet, but that was the only cloud from a pretty good evening at the office for Nagasaki. There was also a rearranged match from round 25 played last midweek, and it involved a huge win for a suddenly informed Gunma side in their Kita Kanto derby away at Tochigi. This game finished Tochigi 0, Gunma 1. Gunma started really well, and Shuto Kitagawa nearly put them ahead in the 10th minute. His header was well blocked by Paul Obina Obi in the Tochigi goal. Kitagawa did break the deadlock just 3 minutes later, though. Yuria Takahashi sent a cross into the Tochigi box. Kennedy Ebers Mikuni made a mess of clearing it, to be honest, and then the ball fell kindly for Kitagawa to score from close range. So that game finished Tochigi 0, Gunma 1. Tochigi struggling on the basis of that game, and Gunma in good recent form and looking like they're edging their way to safety. But yeah, they were the two rearranged J2 games that took place in the midweek. So I think that brings us up to date. So please stay tuned. Coming up in a moment is my chat with Sean about the round 27 J2 action from last weekend. And please hang around after that to hear Magic Mike Innes with all the latest J3 news as well. But that's all from me, and I'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the show. J2 Extra Time. Hello again, listeners. John Steele here again, and I'm joined by Sean Carroll now. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm not doing too bad, thank you. Despite my interesting choice of snack for the evening, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, you've gone for the chocolate crisps, is that right?
Yeah, I've gone for the, they're called Choco Pote Long. Normally, Pote Long are like, I think English listeners might know, do you remember Chipsticks? They used to come in like, you could get salt and vinegar already salted. So pote long are basically like big ones of them. So they're just kind of like your regular kind of sort of, I don't know, is it like maize or corn snack? I don't know, which I'm a fan of with a beer. But Ben Mabley the other day knows I'm a fan of them and sent me a picture of something, which is they've made, as they like to do in Japan, a kind of limited edition version of them, which are covered in chocolate. And my initial thought was, that looks terrible. What have you bought them for? And he said, well, I was just, you know, it was an impulse purchase at the checkout. So I said, well, let me know what they taste like. And he reported back half an hour later and said, yeah, they're not very good, but they might be okay with a beer. And I spotted some this afternoon and thought, well, you know, limited edition, these opportunities might not come again. So and they're not too bad. They're not too bad.
I think we possibly seen the birth of a new segment, impulse buying with Ben and Sean could be a Patreon extra in future. But okay. Well, let me know how the snacks go down. And listeners, if you hear any crunchy sounds, that's we've got Ben and Sean to
Yeah, I do. I apologize in advance. I'll try to crunch away from the phone.
No problems. Well, Sean, thanks so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure. I know that you've got work tomorrow, and I'm just about getting over my COVID vaccination side effects. So I need to get you in and out fairly quick this week, I think, so that you get enough rest.
You're not the first person to say that to me.
And probably vice versa as well.
This is the Choco Potelong. I've got an excuse.
Well, let's get down to business then, Sean. We're going to take a look back at the weekend's J2 action, the 11 matches from round 27. If it's okay, we'll start by talking about the bottom of the table this week, because there was quite a few interesting results and interesting performances as well. First of all, Sagamihara, who I think it's fair to say one of the relegation favourites, they gave Iwata, one of the promotion favourites, an almighty scare in their match at the Yamaha Stadium. It eventually finished 1-1. Now, Sagamihara started brilliantly in this game. Their talismanic midfielder Jungo Fujimoto hit the post with a free kick in just the fourth minute. I wasn't sure on the replays, but I think maybe the Iwata keeper Ryuki Miura got a touch on that. But Sagamihara nearly took the lead early on. And then they hit the woodwork again moments later. Two of their recent new signings combining well. Kaoru Takayama robbed a defender and managed to get the ball to Yuan Matsuhashi, and he twisted his turned his way into a shooting position, but his shot came back off the post. And Sagamihara took a deserved lead in the 37th minute. It was a free kick from Jungo Fujimoto. Yeah, virtually an identical position from where he'd hit the post earlier. Yuto Suzuki had clattered Matsuhashi on the edge of Iwata's penalty area. And yes, Fujimoto stepped up and curled a beautiful effort past Miura. And almost incredibly, Matsuhashi nearly put Sagamihara 2-0 up early in the second half. His shot was cleared off the Iwata goal line by, and I had to check this, I had to wind this back, Sean, it was Lukian. Lukian was back on the goal line defending, which is pretty incredible. With time running out, Iwata started to pile on some pressure, and they equalised with just 1 minute of the 90 remaining. Yasuhito Endo set up Kosuke Yamamoto for a low strike from just outside the box to break Sagamihara's heart. So, Iwata won, Sagamihara won. Surprising result and performance from Sagamihara, Sean. What do you think?
Yeah, it was. I think I agree. It was very, like, then they haven't really played with that much kind of abandon and positivity so far this season, or at least not when I've seen them play. They've tended to be very much keep things tight, try not to concede and hope that they can snatch something. But yeah, they were really, really going at Jubilo. I don't know if there was a case of maybe Sagamihara just thinking, well, we're not going to win this game. Jubilo, you know, I don't know if they were top at the time or they were definitely up near the top at the start of the game. So maybe they just thought, well, we've got nothing to lose. Let's go for it. And maybe on the flip side, Jubilo went into the game a little bit complacent and thought, well, we're going to win this. Let's just, you know, maybe they weren't quite tuned up for it. I'm not sure. But I think, since Takagi's taken over there, they have brought in a fair few players. You mentioned two or three just then. Takayama. And they've brought in Kodama as well. He's been playing out on the left. I don't know if he played in this game, but he's been doing quite well. They've brought in a couple of defenders. I think Seiji Kimura came in from Tokyo. Yudai Fujiwara came in from Urawa Red. So they've really kind of, they've not held back about changing the squad around a fair bit. And it seems to be whether Takagi's realised, like, if they don't go for it, they're going to go down. So they might as well throw a bit of caution to the wind and see what happens. But they've certainly not held back in the transfer market. Jungo Fujimoto is having a second life, a third life. He's really in form. I think, did you say it's three games in a row he's scored now? Which is incredible going. I think they can take a lot of positives. Obviously, they'll be very disappointed to have conceded at the end. And it was kind of a, you know, if you concede one of those goals when everyone's piling into the box, a header from a corner or a mistake or something, but it was kind of a, I think if you tried that shot 10 times, only one of them would even end up on target. So pretty unlucky to concede it. But I think if they can take the positives from the overall performance and the fact they've got a point, they're only 4 points away from safety. It's too early to be calling it safety, I suppose, but they're bottom, but only 4 points beneath Yamaga, who are 18. So if they can carry on playing like that, they should have enough to stay up, really. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are not doing well at the moment or not consistent enough. if Sagami Hara can keep playing like that and win one in three, one in four, and grind out another draw in another of those games, then I think they should have enough. It's just a case of whether they can play like that consistently.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good analysis. I was really impressed with Sagami Hara, especially how they started this game. Sort of the first quarter, it was better than anything I've seen from them this season so far. So I think even though they didn't win, that probably was a bit of a bonus game for them anyway, wasn't it? Like you said, and I think that the manner of the performance will be very encouraging for everyone connected with Sagami Hara. But as you mentioned, they're still bottom of the table at the moment. The second bottom team, Sean, Omiya, are 2 points better off than Sagami Hara. That's because Omiya comprehensively thrashed Matsumoto 4-0 at NAC 5. This is Omiya's first win for absolutely ages. Omiya went after Matsumoto right from the kickoff, really. Atsushi Kawata had two good chances to put the Squirrels ahead, and Kazuaki Mawatari also missed a chance to give the home side the lead. A goal seemed inevitable, though. Omiya were dominant, and it came in the 33rd minute. Nobody in the Matsumoto midfield was particularly bothered about closing down Masato Kojima all evening, so he duly ran the show, and his lofted pass set Atsushi Kurokawa free inside the box. He set up Kawata for a tap-in. In the second half, there was almost no response from Matsumoto, really, and Kurokawa sealed a vital win for Omiya with a brace. He cracked in a fine half volley right at the start of the second half to put the game pretty much out of Matsumoto's reach, and then he scored a close-range header to make it 3. With about 10 minutes left, Seiya Nakano converted a chance from virtually on the goal line. He looked almost embarrassed at how easy it was, and that made it 4-0. And that was it. Matsumoto didn't really have a chance of any note until about 5 minutes from the end, and Yuta Minami in the Omiya goal produced a smart double save to preserve their clean sheet. And I noticed that Omiya have a home game against Tokyo Verdy coming up next, so that could be another chance for them to kind of build some momentum, whereas Matsumoto awful in this match, Sean, bang out of form, and their next two games are against Iwata and Kyoto, the top two. So what did you make of this game? Omiya 4, Matsumoto 0 at full time.
Yeah, it was certainly a surprise. Omiya had been pretty terrible all season, just one of those, this sort of, I don't know, maybe a handful of them in J2 that when you look at the players they've got in the squad, you think, well, they've got more than enough there to be a team that should be maybe not quite challenging for promotion, but they shouldn't be anywhere near where they are in the table. They should be up safely in sort of Jeff United territory, mid-table at least, maybe with an outside chance of when there are playoffs, pushing on for the playoffs, but just haven't looked like a team at any point. But yeah, here they clicked pretty well, I think in large part because the team they were playing are just even worse. Like, again, the players that Yamaga have got in the squad should be pushing, I think, for promotion easily. But I know they've had a fair few injuries in defence. Their defence at the moment looks incredibly shaky, not just in this game. But yeah, I'm not really convinced by any of the... is it Kyowan Hoshi, the guy who came in on loan from Yokohama FC? He looks very erratic. Same with Tokita. And I think with Hashiuchi, he's back on the bench now, but he was out injured for a bit. And I think maybe they're just cautious about rushing him back and him being out for a long time again. But I think, yeah, quite a few sort of senior defenders are out, and they really don't seem to have much of a foundation there. And then the players in front of them, just there's so many options, and neither of the coaches they've had so far, I know Nanami's only probably had sort of 3, 4, 5 games, so it's a bit hard to judge him yet, but neither of them really seem to have been able to get the most out of the players they've got there. When you look at the squad, again, a lot of very talented individuals, but nowhere near a team. A journalist I know who's from Matsumoto, I bumped into her at the Marinos. Who were they playing? Kashima. Marinos Kashima at the weekend. And I asked her about what she thought, and she didn't look best pleased at all with the way things are going. And Nanami, I think, was kind of a weird choice. He didn't really do... I never thought he did especially well at Jubilo. I think he maybe had one year where they did quite well. They pushed on sort of up towards mid-table maybe in J1, and then it all fell through. But he never really looked like a kind of coach able to manage a difficult situation. So to bring him into a team that were expected to be pushing for promotion and were instead struggling down at the bottom, to suddenly throw him in to try and fix things up, I thought was a slightly odd choice. You almost think somebody like Takagi that ended up going to Sagamihara, or even Shimoda, who has now gone in at Omiya, someone who's a kind of a more steady, out on the training pitch coach kind of manager, rather than a kind of a big name whose only job to date had been at the club where he's a living legend. It did seem like an odd choice, and he might still come good. As I said, he's only had, I think, probably half a dozen games maximum. So, but yeah, he doesn't really seem to have, you know, often clubs get a bit of a new manager bounce, and it hasn't really happened for them yet. So yeah, Omiya looked good, but yeah, there is the caveat of they were playing a team that just looked completely without any kind of plan, any kind of confidence at the moment. So I think, yeah, we'll need to keep an eye on Omiya for the next two or three games and see how they build on it, or if they can build on that.
I think that's a really good point. I had trouble sort of analysing this game for me, because I think Omiya did okay, and we should give them some credit, because they've failed to beat plenty of poor teams over the last sort of 4 months, where they haven't won a game at all in the league. So we should give them some credit. They got the job done very effectively. But Matsumoto was so poor. They just lacked any kind of, I mean, you mentioned sort of organisation. I thought they lacked desire. They looked pretty clueless as to what to do. And as I mentioned, when they were a goal behind at halftime, this was an important game for them as well. You know, it's kind of a six-pointer in that sort of bottom third of the table. And they just didn't look that that bothered. And you speak to a lot more players than I do, Sean, in the course of your work, and I'm sure it really annoys players to have sort of armchair, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks like me telling them that they're uninterested and they're not bothered. But based on the evidence of your own eyes sometimes, I think it's hard to defend, isn't it?
Sorry, yeah, I sometimes feel that there's these players, and it's maybe true of both of these clubs, but there are players in both squads that you feel like, yeah, I don't think you can really say that they don't care and they're not trying. But I do think there are players in both of those squads that you think, well, if this team did get relegated, they would get picked up by other clubs in J2. There's enough players there who, whether because of their previous results, whether just because of their name value, whether because of the agent they have, there are players there that you think, yeah, they could get another contract. So it's not a case of they're not trying, they don't care if they lose. But I think if you've got that in the back of your mind, if you kind of know, and play football players, I think, probably would get criticised if they admitted that, and do get criticised when fans think that that's the case. But I think it's kind of, you know, any of us would probably be the same in our jobs. You know, if you can kind of coast and you know that come next year, someone else is going to, you know, you've got this other job lined up, someone else is, you know, next year you're going to be all right, you're not going to go down with the ship. I think kind of subconsciously you might be, you know, you're not going to be as keyed up. Whereas if you're a 22-year-old on your first pro contract, not earning a huge salary, and you know that if we go down next year and they've got to cut five or six players from the squad, that's me gone. You're going to, I think, have more of a pressure to be wanting to turn the ship around, to prove yourself. Whereas maybe if you're 27, 28, and you've already had a good 5, 6, 7 years playing, and you know that, you know, that Jeff are sniffing around and Verdi are sniffing around, and your agents told you that, you know, the team that's going to come up from J3 are looking for players, and then you might just be like, you know, of course you want to win. Of course you're not trying. But yeah, I do wonder sometimes if there is an element of just kind of, there's not quite enough fear in the players that really would get them to turn it round. But again, yeah, that is sort of speculation from the outside. I don't think I've ever heard a player say, no, I'm just not up for it, I'm not trying, I don't care. I've certainly never heard that myself.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, you mentioned Tokyo Verdy, and yeah, as I said, Omiya, they got a good win, handsome win in this game, and a clean sheet. It's something to build on. Tokyo Verdy up next at home again. Tokyo Verdy are not the best team in the league, but compared to that Matsumoto performance, they might as well be sort of, you know, Brazil from 1970. So I think we'll get a better read on Omiya from the next game, I think, against Verdy. For Matsumoto, I mean, Iwata and Kyoto next up. I mean, when you lose a match, you try to take positives, don't you? I don't think there were any positives at all they could take from that game, Omiya. So, I'm wondering where they're going to be. I expect to see them somewhere in the relegation zone after the next two matches. But Yeah, I've been wrong before, Sean, many times, so we guess we'll see. But yeah, sure, it was yeah. Surprise result, or surprisingly easy win for Omiya, I think.
Yes.
Sean, I'm just going to run through some of the other relegation zone affecting games, and I'll come to you for a comment on the relegation zone in general, if that's okay. In another big six-pointer at the weekend, there was a huge win for Tochigi. They picked up the 3 points, winning 1-0 away at Ehime. In this game, Ehime were nearly in front in just the second minute, but Tochigi's keeper Obi saved well from Yoshiki Fujimoto. Then in the ninth minute, a penalty was given against Ehime's Naoki Kuriyama for a handball. The penalty was scored emphatically by Junki Hata, on loan from Nagasaki, I think, for Tochigi. Ehime equalised almost immediately, but Obi saved well again, this time from Shoji Toyama. And in the second half, Toyama and Obi seem to be in the Thunderdome. There's a topical Mad Max reference for you, Sean. You know, two men enter, one man leaves. Yeah, Obi made a fingertip save when Toyama had done everything right. I think that was the chance that was a real top-class save, but there were several other saves that Obi made from Toyama in the second half. A disappointing night for Ehime, and Kuriyama in particular ended with him hitting the post at the death when he was playing as an emergency forward. Yes, and there was still time for Toyama to miss the target again from close range, although it was quite a difficult chance that came at him quickly. We should mention there was no Takamu Kawamura in Ehime's squad for this match. He was sorely missed as their four-match unbeaten run came to an end. And for Tochigi, Sean, this was the first win in 13 matches since they won 3-0 against our old friends who were definitely bothered, Matsumoto. And yeah, I think Tochigi really needed this after losing to Gunma in their rearranged midweek game. They really needed to get some points on the board, didn't they? Two other games with relegation interest, Sean, they both finished 0-0. Kitakyushu at home to Okayama and Gunma at home to Kanazawa. Now, Kitakyushu against Okayama, sometimes 0-0 doesn't tell you the full story of a match, Sean. Sometimes it does. I think this is one of the games where there just wasn't anything to really get excited about. So yeah, 0-0 draw in that game. Gunma Kanazawa was a bit more entertaining, especially the very first minute when Kanazawa nearly scored a comedic own goal. Now, I'm a big fan of the no-look pass, but Taiki Watanabe, he pioneered the no-look back pass, trying to give the ball back to his keeper Masaki Goto. That left Goto scrambling to clear his lines. And then in the same passage of play, Gunma's Akito Takagi headed against the post, so a lucky escape for Kanazawa early on. Kanazawa did have the ball in the net at one point, but the goal was, in my opinion, correctly disallowed for a push. And yeah, goalkeepers were generally on top, as you might expect. Excellent saves from Goto and his opposite number, Shuhei Matsubara. I think Matsubara's save from Honeya Shoji's header was probably the best one. So yes, Ehime 0, Tochigi 1, Kitakyushu 0, Okayama 0, and Gunma 0, Kanazawa 0. Just a quick check on the bottom of the table, Sean. It looks like this, in ascending order from the bottom: Sagamihara 21 points, Omiya 23, Ehime and Kitakyushu on 24 points each, and just outside the relegation zone are Matsumoto on 26 points, Kanazawa 27, and Gunma 29. Just some other points to mention. Gunma are 6 games unbeaten, 3 wins and 3 draws from their last 6 matches, and Matsumoto and Kanazawa have 1 game in hand. But as mentioned, Matsumoto's is against Kyoto, so not sure if we can read too much into that. Sean, any comments on these games from the weekend, or sort of relegation zone in general?
I think the point you mentioned about Kawamura being out for Ehime was key. I think when he plays, they look much more like winning the game. They look like a much better team. He just adds that something extra. And I think vaguely coming back to what we were talking about with Omiya and Matsumoto, in J2, you only really need one or two players that are kind of a step above everyone else in J2 to do that and pull yourself kind of away from the bottom and be kind of up either towards safety, or if you've got 2, 3, 4 players like that, you can be pushing on even higher up. And I think that definitely showed when you see the teams come out on match day. If he isn't playing for Ehime, you always think they're gonna have less of a chance of winning, I think, today. So yeah, that was one to pick up on. I think Junki Hata as well, at Tochigi, he did quite well at Nagasaki a couple of years ago, but he always seemed to struggle with that that, I don't know what you'd call it, affliction of being a not very glamorous Japanese striker at a club that wants either a player that is a reasonably big name, like a Ken Tokura, or a Brazilian striker. You know, Hatta was playing for a, he had a reasonable spell where he was playing because of injuries or suspensions, and he was scoring fairly regularly. And then I think when, I don't know if it would have been Edgar Jr., maybe Kamen Togashi came back from injury, and then Hatta was dropped back to the bench. So when Tochigi picked him up, I thought it was a decent move, because he seemed like a reasonable finisher. And then he's then struggled to get minutes because they've got Kisho Yano and they've now bought in Yohei Toyoda. So I thought poor guy might have the same issue, even though he's dropped down to Tochigi. So he's come into the side. I think he's been playing kind of wide right rather than in a central role. But yeah, he's scored a couple of goals recently. So yeah, I think it's always nice to see these players that do look like kind of decent players who are just kind of maybe held back a little bit for one reason or another. So yeah, but I think, yeah, you know, those teams, it's so difficult, you know, to pick before the match who's going to win. If Gunma are playing Tochigi, if Ehime are playing Giravanse, it's almost toss a coin and see, it's whichever team turns up on the day. But yeah, I think Kanazawa, yeah, have been pretty poor lately. I think I've probably said on the pod before, but I'm a fan of Yanagishita, their manager. I think he's sort of overachieved for several years now at Kanazawa and done a good job of not just sort of having the team avoid any kind of relegation scraps, but also kind of developing decent young players, giving them chances to play, and, you know, some of whom have moved on to bigger and better things. So yeah, for them to, it's quite rare, I think, for them to dip into such a prolonged run of poor form. They might sort of win one, draw one, lose one for a spell, but yeah, they've really been struggling to do much of late. So that, yeah, that could be one to keep an eye on and just see. But yeah, I do think there's enough teams. They've probably got enough about them, and Yanagishita has enough about him to settle upon the best formation of players, the players that he thinks are going to work and drag them out. I know they've had a couple of injuries. I think both their centre-backs, Ishio and Shoji, have been struggling with injuries lately. If he can get them both fit, I think Rodolfo was doing quite well out on the left wing, and he's been out. If he can come back in and add something a bit extra, I think that they should be okay. I don't think they'll be in any serious relegation trouble. I think enough of the other teams down there are worse than them over the rest of the season. But yeah, as you said, the Giravanse Okayama game, there wasn't much happening. Although, yeah, just Okayama have brought in Mitch Duke, formerly of Shimizu S-Pulse. And I think we might have touched on it last time I was on, about Lee Yongjae, that's the one. He's been out injured for pretty much about a year now. And he's kind of been Fagiano's number nine, the main man up front for a good two or three seasons, but has struggled with injury so much. And it looks like they've finally kind of given up on him, and Duke has come in and added something a bit extra for Okayama.
Yeah, Mitch Duke seems to be really enjoying his football at Okayama. And it's hard for me to get my head around someone enjoying playing for Okayama. So it's good to see that.
Oh, Okayama's a nice enough place.
Oh, and it's the style of football that I play might not enjoy.
But he's Australian, isn't he? You know, getting it up into the box, getting it in the mixer, getting involved.
Yeah, I think the only player who I've seen smiling more in the last few rounds is Peter Utaka, but I think we're going to talk about more about him a little bit later. Yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot, Sean. I think I should just mention I omitted Tochigi completely from our discussion of the league table a minute ago. So at the moment, Tochigi in 17th place. They have 26 points from 27 matches. So apologies to any Tochigi fans for forgetting about you. It was accidental. Sean, where do you think we can draw the sort of relegation danger line? You know, there's Akita in 13th on 31 points. We'll talk about them in part two. But who is safe at the moment, do you think? Where is the safety line?
Well, it maybe sounds a bit misleading. I think above Akita sounds safe. I think you've got Okayama, Verdy, Jeff, Mito. I think upwards from there, those teams are going to get enough points over the rest of the season to not be dropping down. But I do think also that Renofa Yamaguchi, who are currently below Akita by a couple of points, I think they've probably got enough. I don't really think that they'll drop down, but I think Akita, basically from Gunma down. So Gunma, Kanazawa, Tochigi, Yamaga, Giravans, Ehime, Omiya, Sagamihara. And then I would probably drop Blaublitz into the equation just because I think they might start to run out of legs a bit. They haven't got the biggest squad. They've lost Suzuki at right back, who was key. They don't look to have many goals in them. So I think Blaublitz could get drawn into it. But that's a lot of teams, nine teams for four places. So it's still a lot of football to be played. And, you know, if you can put together a bit of a run, even if you just get two wins in a row, any of those teams, suddenly the picture changes a lot. And then there's a lot of teams that need to pick up points to overtake you. So, yeah, there's still a long way to go, but I probably would draw it about there.
Yeah, I think it's gonna sort of change week to week, isn't it, from now until the end of the season. Yamaguchi is an interesting one. We'll talk about them in more detail later. I tend to agree with you. I think Yamaguchi will end up being okay, but they don't score many goals either, do they? I think they've got 20, which is the second worst after Sagamihara. Sagamihara only scored 16. So, but I agree with you. My perception is they'll be okay, but yeah, and they do need to get a few more goals. I suppose they've actually got quite a decent defence as well, which you know means they're just a low scoring and low conceding team. But all good stuff. We've worried fans of enough teams. I think in that segment. So let's take a quick recording break if that's okay. And when we come back, we'll round up the games from the top and the middle of the J2 table from the weekend. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. Sean and I have had a quick comfort break. We're ready to talk about more of the weekend's J2 action. Sean, we're going to jump tracks a little bit and go to the top of the table for the next few minutes. We'll talk about Kyoto Sanga. They're a point ahead of Iwata at the top of the league. Kyoto came from behind to beat Tokyo Verde 3-1 at Sanga Stadium on Saturday. Kyoto got a shock in the 20th minute when Verde scored on the break. Ryota Kajikawa crossing for Jin Hanato to slide the ball past Tomoya Wakahara in the Kyoto goal. As you'd expect from a side chasing promotion, though, Kyoto did their best to respond. Peter Utaka hit the angle of the post and the crossbar with a half volley just before half time. And then 10 minutes into the second half, Utaka did equalise for Kyoto with a great strike from the edge of the box. Just 5 minutes later, it was 2-1 to the home team. The half time substitute Ismaila rose highest to knock down a corner for Jordi Bice to fire the ball into the roof of the net. And then Ismaila himself sealed the points midway through the second half with a goal that Verdi's defender Boniface Nduka won't want to see again. He passed the ball straight to Utaka, of all the people in the division to pass the ball to when you're the last defender. And Utaka played in Ismaila, who scored gleefully, really, finished with aplomb. Verde had a couple of late chances, and Boyce was well placed to clear off the line before full time. But in the end, it was a comfortable win for Kyoto, 3-1 against Tokyo Verde. Also coming from behind to win at home, Sean, were the third place team, Ryukyu. They hosted Akita. This game was very quiet for the first hour. I think perhaps partly because it was played behind closed doors in Okinawa, but just around the hour mark, Akita shocked the home side when Naoki Inoue headed an inch-perfect cross from Masaki Okino into the net. So Akita taking a shock lead in about the 62nd minute, and it looked as though Akita might claim an unexpected away win, but Ryukyu got the chance to equalise with a penalty 13 minutes from full time. A shot from Koya Kazama was charged down by Akita's Kaito Chida. The ball definitely hit his arm, and a penalty was given. For me, I'm not sure. The ball was just, you know, fired at him from such close range. I'm not sure what he could have done, but a penalty was given, and it was tucked away with a minimal fuss by Takuma Abe. And Ryukyu got their winner just 6 minutes later from a very unlikely source. Substitute defender Ryoji Fukui slammed in a brilliant 20-yard effort that left Akita's goalkeeper Yudai Tanaka with no chance. I've seen Fukui a lot, and I've never seen him do that before. Not sure what the deal was with that. But yeah, so Ryukyu 2, Akita 1 at full time. I'll just mention one more surprising result before I come back to you, Sean. Niigata are still hanging on to fourth place, but they got thrashed 4-0 away at Mito Hollyhock, with Masato Nakayama scoring twice for the home side. Nakayama converted a through ball from Kai Matsuzaki to open the scoring in the 21st minute, and things stayed like that until about 7 minutes into the second half. Some great skill from Ryo Nisato set up a chance for Koya Okuda, but he mishit his shot. Fortunately, it landed straight on head of Shota Fujio, who headed it in from close range. And just 10 minutes later, it was 3-0. Nakayama tapping in unmarked from a low right-wing cross. And things got even better for Mito. In the 68th minute, they won a penalty after Kazuhiko Chiba wrestled Mizuki Ando to the ground inside the Niigata penalty area. Ando took the penalty himself and scored, even though the Niigata keeper Ryosuke Kojima got a good hand to the ball. Niigata did hit the crossbar right at the death with a header. I'm not sure who it was. I think it might have been Kaito Taniguchi. But it finished Mito 4, Niigata 0. Just one win for Niigata in their last five matches. They seem to be wobbling, noticeably wobbling at the moment, Sean. And their team selection was a bit weird for this game, I felt, with Shion Honma, Koji Suzuki, Romero Frank all on the bench. So lots to unpack, Sean. Just before I get your comments, the top four in the table at the moment looks like this. We have Kyoto in first place. They're on 57 points and they have a game in hand on the other promotion chasers. Iwata are second. They're on 56 points. And there's a 5-point gap back to third place. Ryukyu, they're on 51. And Niigata, yes, grimly clinging on to fourth place on 50 points. So what do you make of these results from the weekend, Sean? Kyoto 3, Verdy 1, Ryukyu 2, Akita 1, Mito 4, Niigata 0.
Let's start with Kyoto because they're top. I think, they're starting to look pretty effective. Maybe good would be the wrong word. I still think they don't quite seem to be clicking for sort of matches as a whole. They're not really dominating, but I think they're starting to be very effective. Choki J, obviously, when he was with Shonan, won J2 at least maybe a couple of times. I don't know how many times they got promoted in total under him, but I think they might have won the league twice. Once they really ran away with it. So he knows how to get out of the league, and it looks like he's finally kind of settled upon the players he wants. Again, they've got a lot of players in the squad that don't get a look in, who you'd think would be getting minutes at a lot of other clubs in J2. And here, like you mentioned, that they were given some assistance by some pretty generous defending. And you don't want to be giving Peter Utaka the ball anywhere near the penalty area, really. And he will make you pay. So I think Kyoto is looking a bit ominous, as you say, with a game in hand as well. If they win that, they're 4 points clear at the top, which would put them, I think, 9 points clear of third place. So that's three games there to the good between them and falling out of the promotion places. And again, obviously there's a lot of football to play, but are any of the teams down outside of those places going to put up enough of a run to turn around those many points? It's hard to see, really. And Ryukyu, it was a pretty quiet game. It didn't really, I think it probably could have gone either way. I think Ryukyu probably had the better of things on the whole. I think if they'd shared the points, I don't think it would have been an unfair result. But a cracking goal at the end. I think it's always nice as a former sort of utility player, fullback myself, I didn't really score many goals. And so to see a player who, as you said, doesn't really come up with those kind of things, doesn't really come up with goals that often, let alone wonder strikes like that. It's always pleasing to see kind of unexpected scorers of wonder goals like Fukui. So that I think in the end that probably they were deserving of the win because of that. And Mito absolutely tore Albirex apart. They looked unplayable. Nisato's, it wasn't quite an assist because I think there was a bit of pinball before the ball actually went in the goal, but that lovely bit of skill that took out three Albirex defenders to set the wheels in motion was excellent. I watched that back quite a few times. Albirex, as you said, like the squad selection has been a bit odd. It wasn't just in this game, but Shion Honma hasn't been playing for a while now. He's been on the bench. I don't know what exactly that is, because he's easily their best player, just can make stuff happen, can set up goals, can score goals. So whether he's been carrying some kind of knock, whether there's been some kind of falling out behind the scenes, whether he was on the verge of moving to St. Troiden or Portimonense with, you know, with the rest of the Japanese players that head to Europe around this time. And maybe a move was about to happen. And so the coach thought, well, if he's going, I need to, you know, I need to work with the players we're going to have. And then the move fell through, or I don't know, because it's odd to not be playing your best player and nothing. I haven't heard anything about why he's not playing. I think, yeah, Koji Suzuki maybe has struggled a bit with injury. He's been in and out of the team. But is it Takazawa? Yuya Takazawa? I don't really know. He's a bit of a... I haven't seen a lot of him, but he doesn't strike me as a kind of a player that fits in with Albert... I don't know how you say his surname. Puig? I don't think he really seems to fit in. He looks more like a kind of Nagasawa of Big Talk, you know, the mascot of Big Talk, Nagasawa. He looks kind of more like a very traditional kind of old school centre forward, a big guy that you get balls up to. And Niigata don't really build in that way. You know, they're far more about getting it on the deck and moving forward at pace and combining. So I'm not really sure, what the coach has been thinking. There's been a fair few changes. I know, I think the goalkeeper Kojima was out injured for a while, and so was Fukuta in the middle of the park, and in their place, Abe was doing well in goal, and Cole, who'd come in from, is it Takahiro? I think it's Takahiro Cole, was doing well alongside Shimada. And then as soon as the guys that were starters last year were fit again, he put them straight back in, and it just seems to have maybe upset the balance a little bit. I don't know. Obviously, it's probably not as simple as that. But yeah, it could also just be that maybe teams have kind of found them out a bit. When you know that is how they're going to play, they're going to want to dominate possession. And, you know, if you haven't got a plan B, then halfway through the season, when everybody's played you once and kind of knows what to expect, if they've torn you apart in the corresponding fixture 3-4 months ago, you know what you don't want to happen. So you set up to prevent it. And if Niigata haven't got a plan B, then they're going to struggle, I think. Or maybe this is their plan B, to drop the best players and try and catch the opponents out. But it certainly didn't work here. Mito looked very, very good. Really playing with confidence going forward. And certainly wasn't a result that I'd expected. But yeah, on the balance of play, they certainly deserve to win comfortably.
Very enjoyable team to watch, Mito. Yeah. Once they get over the halfway line, anyway, it's a bit chaotic when they're facing their own goal, aren't they? Yeah, I think the key word for me when it comes to Niigata is what you mentioned about balance. And at the moment, yeah, I can't quite put my finger on it, but something's not quite right. They're not scoring many goals like they were early on in the season. And they, at the back, they have looked very kind of all at sea at times. And I think, is it Kazuhiko Chiba was out injured, and then him coming back was going to strengthen the defence. But I think he's gave away a penalty in this game. I think he gave one away in another game, a home game, or he made a bad mistake in a home game that led to a goal as well. So... I don't know, just too many underperforming players at the moment, and possibly the manager's underperforming a little bit as well, as you said. So we'll see. I mean, they're 6 points off the promotion places. That's not an insurmountable gap, but they're not really playing like a team that's going to close that gap at the moment, are they? So yeah, we'll see. But I think my socks, one sock was blown off with the Omiya results, and then my other sock went with this one's 2-2 4-0 results, and I was both my socks were blown off. So we should say well done to Mito.
Is that why you've been buying Family Mart socks?
Oh yeah, he put Family Mart socks. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I need replacement. As Mike Innes is telling us, it's non-stop bangers from now until the end of the season. I'm going to need extra socks. So Sean, three more games from the weekend to round up before I let you get off to bed. So in fifth place, 10 points off the promotion places, but with a game in hand on second placed Iwata, so they might not be giving up on promotion just yet, are Yamagata. They lost ground with a surprise defeat away at Yamaguchi. They lost this game 2-1. Very entertaining match. Two teams that like to attack. Yamagata went close three times early on in this game. Atsutaka Nakamura, talking about strange team selections. Vinicius Araujo, and they also had a header off the crossbar. I didn't quite see who it was, but yeah, Yamagata hit the crossbar early on as well. But then Yamaguchi went in front. A simple long ball from a free kick found Yuki Kusano clean through, and he scored gleefully. I think this was his first game back after quite a long injury layoff, so he seemed to really enjoy scoring that goal. Kusano was clean through again at the start of the second half, but Yamagata's keeper Victor saved his early shot, and then at the other end, Taiki Kato missed a chance for Yamagata at the back post. Yamagata did equalise about 11 minutes into the second half. Yamaguchi's goalkeeper Kentaro Seki got caught underneath a deep right-wing cross, and Vinicius Araujo headed in from close range. But then 19 minutes from full-time, Yamaguchi won it with a goal from their captain, Joji Ikegami. His first of the season, he thumped in a low cross from Ayumu Kawai. Yamaguchi 2, Yamagata 1. Yamagata's first defeat, I think, since Peter Klimovsky took charge about three months or so ago. And I'll mention the other two games on the slate before I come back to you, Sean. Machida Zelvia are up to 6th. This is after beating Vanfire Kofu 3-0 at home. Kofu in 7th, and these two sides are actually level on points. Just 4 minutes on the clock in this match when Taiki Hirato put Machida in front with a trademark curling shot from the edge of the box. 8 minutes before half-time, some great approach play from Hirato, and Kaina Yoshio teed up Ryo Takai to slam in a vital second goal. And on the hour, Yoshio was the provider again. He set up Aria Jasuru Hasegawa to finish emphatically into the roof of the net for 3-0. And 3-0 scoreline, I think, tells us pretty much everything about that match. Kofu just weren't at the races, and Machida were too good. The last game from the round 27 fixtures, Jeff Chiba, they beat a very tired-looking Nagasaki 2-0 at Fukuda Denshi Arena. Jeff well on top in the first half of this match. Sean, Solomon Sakuragawa put them on their way when he scored the opener in the 13th minute, powerfully heading home from a corner. And the Nagasaki keeper Masaya Tomizawa was a busy man. He had to save from Sakuragawa and also from Daisuke Suzuki before half-time to keep the score down. Jeff eventually added a second goal with virtually the last kick of the match in the 7th minute of second half stoppage time. Tomoyamiki slipped a through ball for Takayuki Funayama, and he finished confidently past Tomizawa. So yeah, tired looking Nagasaki team, and Jeff beat them 2-0. At home. That's a result that leaves Nagasaki in 8th place, 12 points off the promotion places. I think for me they that's going to be too big a gap for them to make up this year. I don't know what you think, Sean, but yes. So Yamaguchi 2, Yamagata 1, Machida 3, Kofu 0, and Jeff Chiba 2, Nagasaki 0. Did you spot anything of interest in these games, Sean?
Let's go with Montedio because they're highest up. Yeah, I think it was the first defeat under Klimovsky, but I think they probably should have won it or at least taken a draw. I think they were a bit hard done by to not leave with any points from that. But yeah, I think that was probably, I want to say it was his 12th game, might even have been more than that. That's going to happen. I think you have to be very lucky to go unbeaten for that long. You're going to get a stroke of luck going against you, or you know, not quite falling for you. And if it only happens once in 12 games, then he'll be happy over the rest of the season. If they can go on another run over the last 12, then they should, they've probably got more than 12, haven't they? But yeah, if they can go on another similar run, then he'll be more than happy. So yeah, disappointing, but the performance as a whole wasn't too bad. And I think, yeah, Machida too, it's the kind of performance that I'd kind of like to see from them more. The players they've got, I think they're capable of doing that more often. Yeah, Ranko Popovic seems sometimes to be maybe a little bit too cautious. Often they'll score, they'll go 1-0 up and then kind of try to take the sting out of things. And then the centre-backs, whether it's Fukatsu and Takahashi or whether Mizumoto's in there, they've always seemed to have a mistake in them. So it's kind of a bit of a risky approach to take. So I'd kind of like them to throw the handbrake off a bit more often. I think if they did, then they could. I think, yeah, they're probably too far back. I agree with you that, yeah, Nagasaki, I think, promotion is out of the question this year, and I'd probably include Kofu and Machida in that as well. I just think if Machida had played like that more often this season, they could have another 5-6 points in the bag, and they'd be in the mix for promotion. I just think I can't see them playing like that consistently enough over the rest of the season to overhaul the teams ahead of them. And yeah, Montedio, I think, can they still make it? I think they can. I think obviously they're going to need teams above them to dip. Jubilo have been in a great run of form, and then that draw against Sagamihara, will that knock their confidence a bit? Montedio with the game in hand as well. I don't think you can rule them out. They've made a couple of signings, bought in some players to freshen things up. They bought in the youngster Kabayama, I think, I don't know his first name, but from Marinos has come in. Quentin Martinez, I think they announced they'd agreed a signing, but they still haven't finalized all the medical stuff. So I'm not really sure that he kind of fits their style. He's more of a kind of maverick, do stuff on his own kind of dribbler type, whereas Klamovsky, obviously having worked with Postecoglou for so long, is more of a, you know, it's a team effort and everyone working as a single living, breathing organism rather than doing stuff on their own. So whether he's just going to be thrown in as the wild card to come off the bench in the last half an hour or so, it remains to be seen. But yeah, they've added a couple of players which can only help, I think. Well, I haven't said that, it might not, you might upset the rhythm, the wheels might fall off, but yeah, but I think Montedio, yeah, could still be in the running as an outside bet. I think that's sort of where I would draw the line. The top five probably is where we're going to get our two going up. And the other game there was, yeah, Jeff against Nagasaki. I agree. I think Nagasaki have just, they've had a bit of a mess of a season. They messed up, I think, with the choice of manager at the start. I think some of the player selections haven't been all that. The amount of money they must be spending on their strike force, and none of them are really looking potent. Edgar Jr., when they signed him on loan, I think midway through last season, looked like he was going to really dominate J2, and I think he's had a few injury problems, but he's not really hit the form I expected. Ken Tokura as well, not really done as well as I thought he might. They've still got oh god, what's his name, he hasn't played for, so Ibarbo is still on their books. They must be earning a reasonable wage. So yeah, I just think they need to maybe sort things out behind the scenes a bit and work out exactly what they are and what they want to be, and focus on building a team rather than sort of throwing money and bringing in Brazilians, or as they like to call them here, veteran players, and hoping that something will stick. And Jeff, yeah, I think I've been quite impressed recently in the last few weeks. Yun Jonghwan has, although I do quite like Saldanha. I'm not the biggest fan of Funayama. I think he's quite a Jeff player. He's got a reputation, and I think it kind of may be a slightly bigger reputation than is merited on what he's achieved, on his performances over the last few years. But yeah, in recent games, Ewan has been playing. He's dropped Funayama and Saldanha, and Sakuragawa has been starting up front. Asahi Yada has come back in as a kind of support striker, and I really like Miki. I think Miki is a very good player. I think he will probably be moving on next year. I can see him maybe joining someone in J1, maybe like a kind of a Sagan Tosu or someone like that. I think he's a really, really good player. So it's good to see Yun kind of giving these. I'm going to say he's young, but he might not, because this is the J League. He seems like he's young, but he might actually be 25 already, Miki. But yeah, Yun seems to be kind of giving players chances on merit. Sueyoshi has been playing out wide on the left, who came in from Montedio last year. He's another player I quite like. So yeah, I think Jeff, again, yeah, they're in the Jeff position, kind of sort of looking ruefully up and going, oh, if only we'd started a bit better, we could be there. But yeah, they're clearly far enough above the relegation zone that they'll cruise through the end of the season, as they always do, with heartfelt promises to the fans that next year will be their year when they return to their rightful place in J1.
Yeah, I think Jeff and Nagasaki are kind of interesting teams to compare, because I think Jeff are definitely better than they were last season. They're certainly more organised and harder to beat. I think last season's Jeff would have found a way to lose this match 1-0, probably with a goal in the last minute. Yeah. So for them to win it, I mean, they, you know, the second goal came right at the end, so it's, you know, they were only one goal better off for the entirety of the match, really. But they were worthy winners. They held on to the lead quite doggedly without being pushed too hard by Nagasaki. I think for Nagasaki, they're clearly worse than last season. You know, when they missed out on promotion just by the finest of margins, didn't they? And this season they're going to be nowhere near. And as you mentioned, this is despite having a big investment on the playing side. Ken Tucker are not cheap Probably just his social media management team probably costs a lot of money itself.
Well, I think for Varun as well, I think I want to say Hiroki Akino, but I might have made up his first name. He seems like a Hiroki Akino. But Akino, I think, was vital for them last year in the middle of the park. I think Caio Cesar maybe kind of draws the eye more. He gets a bit more attention because he's a kind of all action, and he's got the bleached hair, and he comes up with a screamer from time to time. But I think Akino, when he was in there, just really was the glue that kind of held everything together. He kind of sorted the transitions between defence and attack, and in reverse between attack and defence. He just seemed to really be that presence in the middle of the park, a bit like Kenny Wow was at Vortis. But those players that, you know, they don't score many goals, they don't make sort of crunching tackles, they don't do the kind of the big things, but they're just, you know, you, it's a bit like Kawamura Ehime, we touched upon, does get the goals too. But yeah, he's kind of one of those players that anyone who ever played football, you know, you've got that one player in the team who, if he's not there on Saturday because he's hungover or he's injured or something, the team, you, even before kickoff, you're all looking around thinking, wow, it's probably not going to go our way today. And I think Akino, maybe, not to say that Masaru Kato, who's been taking his place, is a bad player, but I just don't think he has that same presence. And I think maybe over the, you know, Akino's been out now for a good 2 or 3 months, I think. And if someone of that stature is missing for a few games, maybe you can cover. But I think over the long term, those kind of absences do add up. And I think that's part of the reason why they're now, what are they, 12 points away from the promotion places rather than 3 or 4, maybe.
No, agreed. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what their kind of winter transfer window looks like in terms of players coming or going as they sort of try to build for next season. I take your point as well on Tommy Amiki. I also think he's likely to be moving on because he's caught the eye pretty much all the way through the season in that kind of just sort of in the pocket, right? In the kind of hole. In the hole, yeah. Behind a central striker. So, I obviously I'm biased. I hope Jeff can keep him for another season, but it seems quite unlikely, doesn't it? I think he's done enough to get a move higher up. And yeah, Machida as well. Yeah, I think I haven't seen them very often just to take the game by the scruff of the neck and hold it for 90 minutes, which they did against Kofu. They've played well in like a first half or a second half quite often, especially at home, but they haven't kind of put it together like they did in this match. And Kofu, I think, pretty much not on the beach, obviously, because the Japanese season finishes in winter, but, you know, on the southern beaches, maybe, or just not really, I don't know, they didn't exert themselves that much in this game. But I think maybe Machida just were too good.
This is the issue when there's no playoffs. Like we're sort of speculating now and drawing the line and going, this is probably the point. And again, we touched upon it with, you know, players are never going out and thinking, I don't care if we win or lose today. They all want to win once they're out there. But there is that element of how much, you know, there will be one team will be wanting it more. And I do think, yeah, players will be doing the same now. And if there's playoffs, you can move that line down to pretty much, you know, you could almost go down to Verdi, 37 points. And they'd be going, well, you know, we could. There's only 8 points up to sixth if we put a run together. Suddenly, you've then got the top 11 teams who are playing for something. Whereas now, you can take half a dozen of them out because they're probably going, promotion is probably beyond us. And they're looking over their shoulder and going, yeah, well, those teams are not going to catch us. So, yeah, I think psychologically, it does kind of hamper teams a bit, you know, because players are only human. They are looking at the table as well and thinking, well, that's, you know, we're not going to make up 20 points in 15 or 16 games. So I think it does affect them as well. And that's why it's a shame. Yeah, if we can get playoffs back next year, which I'm not sure if we will. I don't think anything's been decided yet, but I think it's still up in the air. It takes away a lot of the kind of interest, the intrigue and the excitement over the last kind of couple of months, because three quarters of the league, half of the league are just not playing for anything.
No, good points. I agree. I'm a big fan of the playoffs as well. I hope they do come back, you know, sort of scheduling permitting for next year. Yeah. I'll just say as well done to Yamaguchi. I think you're right that they were quite fortunate to win the game against Yamagata, but beating Yamagata is something that nobody's managed to do for 3 months or so. So for them to get the job done is a real boost for them. So yeah, well done to them. Sean, just before I let you disappear, we'll just look ahead to the games coming up this weekend, if that's all right, in round 28. Most of the matches are going to be on Saturday. September the 4th. So we have Akita hosting Gunma, Sagamihara hosting Jeff Chiba. Leaders Kyoto travel to Kofu, so that's 7th place hosting 1st place. 2nd place Iwata are also on the road. They visit out of form, shall we say, Matsumoto. So you've got 18th place welcoming 2nd place there. Of course, Hiroshi Nanami as well, having a game against his old team, I suppose. Niigata against Kita Kyushu is also on the slate, so that's 4th place against 19th. And a game that I quite like, Luke, is Yamagata against Mito. I think that game is just going to have loads of chances, isn't it? It's definitely going to be 2-2 or 3-3 or something. Other games on Saturday, Kanazawa against Machida and Nagasaki against Ryukyu. So that's 8th place hosting 3rd place. 3 games on Sunday, and they all kind of have a bit of a relegation 6-pointer vibe to them, don't they? Tochigi hosting Yamaguchi, Okayama hosting Ehime, and Omiya against Tokyo Verde, a game that we talked about already. And just real quick, Sean, for the listeners to keep an eye on, next Tuesday, September the 7th, we do have one rearranged game that was postponed earlier in the season, I think from round 24, and it's Matsumoto's game in hand against Kyoto. So again, yeah, 18th place in the table, hosting the leaders. And a game that could have some repercussions at the foot of the table. So, which games would you which games do you like the look of on the round 28 slate, Sean?
I have to agree with you with the Montedio Mito. I think it's with Mito's defending and Montedio's attacking, and Mito, they don't hold back going forward either. So I think there'll be lots of chances. And I think also it'll just be interesting based on what each of them did in their last game. Montedio finally lost under Klamowski, so psychologically for them, and obviously sort of chasing promotion points wise for them, they can't afford pretty much not to win this one. They need to get back to winning ways to right the ship. So for them, that's a must win. And for Mito, like, they'll want to show that it wasn't a fluke against Albirex, that they are, you know, they're a team to be reckoned with, and that they can hold it against the big boys. And, you know, and having done so well against Niigata, they won't have anything to fear. They, you know, hopefully they'll go and attack the game. So yeah, we could be in for that. Will definitely be, I think, for neutrals. I don't know what games are being broadcast on YouTube by the J League, but yeah, if that was the one chosen, I think that would definitely be worth tuning in for. And maybe the one beneath that in the fixtures, Kanazawa against Machida, because on a similar train of thought, Machida did so well in the last game and showed what they're capable of. But often, you said they'll sometimes play well for a half and then not the second half, or start badly and then pick up. And it would be good to see them go on a bit of a run. I haven't got the results in front of me, but I'm not sure I can remember them really putting together a run of wins this season. They'll tend to win one, maybe win a couple and then lose. And they definitely set up any rhythm. So, you know, looking at both teams' recent form, Machida should be looking at that one as another 3 points. And for Kanazawa, they've been in a bit of a slump. And can they pick up? Can they finally kind of put an end to it and get the 3 points? If I was Kanazawa, I'd be looking at it and going, well, this is winnable. Machida are inconsistent, and you know how they're going to play. And at the same time, if I was Machida, I'd be going, this is who you want to be playing now. If we want to put together a run of wins and build on that impressive win over Kofu, this is the team we want to be playing against. So that could be another one to keep an eye on, I think.
Fair enough. And just real quick, Kofu against Kyoto. You mentioned Kyoto being sort of efficient rather than spectacular. You think there's any chance of them coming unstuck away at Kofu, or will they be too good?
No, I think they could. Whether they'll lose, whether Kofu have got enough to beat them, I don't know. I think Kofu might have a few players out injured at the moment, and they don't have the biggest goal threat. I think the guy William Lira up front doesn't look like the most lethal striker. So they don't seem to have a lot in attack, Kofu, but I certainly wouldn't be hugely shocked if this one was to be a draw. I know Kofu shipped 4 against Machida, but I think they were probably as shocked as the rest of us that Machida were quite so aggressive. They'll know they need to be on their toes against the likes of Utaka and Ismaila and Matsuda and Takitomi. So yeah, they could get a draw there, and I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that were to happen. But yeah, I think Kyoto still have to be put down as the favourites, but yeah, not overwhelming.
Yeah, fair enough. All good stuff. I think I'll just pick out one more. Akita hosting Gunma. If Gunma come back from Akita with the 3 points, I think that kind of would that would put Gunma on the verge of being out of the relegation battle for me. Not safe, but, you know, very close to being safe. And it would kind of exacerbate the recent trouble that Akita have been having, I think. Because I don't think Akita haven't won a game for a while. They'll obviously be targeting this game as a winnable one because it's at home and it's Gunma. But if it doesn't go their way, I think it could lead. Well, I think the last couple of months of the season is going to be interesting anyway. But it could mean Akita, you know, sort of slipping down the table a little bit more. I think, I don't know.
I could see. I don't know. I think even if Gunma were to win this, they're one of the clubs I can see suddenly going on a run where they don't win for six, or, you know, they lose six or seven in a row. So I still don't think that would quite draw them out of it. And yeah, they've had this kind of weird thing where I don't know if the players have been out because of COVID or if it's just an injury, sort of spate of injuries. But I think one of their games was called off because there was an outbreak within the club. And these announcements tend to be quite vague and they don't name players. They kind of say players or club staff or... But they've been missing kind of three, four, five sort of regular starters, including Genki Omae. And since they've been out, the team has picked up in form. So, yeah, I do wonder if maybe once those guys come back in, that it might upset the apple cart a bit and they could run into a bit of poor form. So, yeah, I don't know. Even if they were to win that, I certainly agree about Akita that maybe they could get drawn down into a scrap that they... maybe a month or so ago they thought they were well away from. But Gunma, I don't think they'll be safe until they're mathematically clear. I don't think they'll be wanting to relax.
Nah, fair enough. It's always, they're in a strange situation with Genki Omae, aren't they? Because I think you're right, as soon as he's fit and able to play, he'll come straight back in. But they've actually been doing better, somehow been doing better without him. So that's kind of a weird paradox that they've generated for themselves there. All right, but Sean, thanks so much for all your comments and your analysis. It's always good to get together and chat. It's good to see where we agree and where we differ as well. And I think we're finishing at least an hour earlier than we normally do in terms of our recording schedule, so hopefully that's good, and you still have enough crisps to see you through the night.
This is definitely in an Olympic and Paralympic theme we've set a personal best.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, long may it continue. Thanks a lot. Yes. Sean, and hopefully we can get together again soon and see how wrong we were about all the things we said on this show.
Exactly.
Thanks as always for listening to the pod and downloading. We really appreciate that support here at JTalk Pod. And if you support us on Patreon as well financially, obviously we really appreciate that too. We don't take that for granted. So thank you for that. And hope you enjoyed the show and you enjoy the football coming up this weekend. Probably something I should have mentioned earlier, but I'll mention it now because I just remembered, is that please don't go away, because after a brief musical sting, Magic Mike Innes is going to be back to talk about all of the weekend's J3 action, because J3 is finally back. And some people might have forgot it was actually happening, Sean, because they went on a break for 7 weeks there and left us all hanging. But J3 is back, and in a moment Mike's going to be along to tell you all about what happened at the weekend. So here comes Mike, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.
Hello, J3 watchers, and after the long summer break, welcome back to JTalk Short Corner. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on the weekend games in round 16 and previewing fixtures coming up in round 17 of what's turning out to be a gripping J3 season. Straight into the action this week, and among the five games on Saturday the 28th of August, there were wins for promotion-chasing Katare Toyama, Iwate Gurudja Morioka, Roasso Kumamoto, Kagoshima United, and most emphatically for Fukushima United, who stunned FC Gifu as one of the main beneficiaries of Fukushima's recent points deduction. Gifu came into the game second in the table, and with coach Takayoshi Anma having strengthened the squad over the break. On loan Mito Hollyhock forward Shunpei Fukahori was among the subs, whereas for visiting Fukushima, Ismaila's seeming replacement, Gabriel, was absent from the matchday squad. The game was decided by an extraordinary 25-minute spell in the second period, which began when Hiroshi Yoshinaga cut in from the right-hand side and fired home with his left foot, continued via Kazuki Dohana's superb 40-yard effort and a shot by Uheiji Uehata that took a huge deflection off Shota Kawanishi past Kazushige Kirihata, and was rounded off by substitute forward Kota Mori, making his debut for Fukushima after an unheralded move from Renofa Yamaguchi. The game ended Gifu 0, Fukushima 4. And while followers of J3 this year may have learned to attach limited importance to the results of individual fixtures, this looks like being for Yu Tokisaki and Fukushima United a riposte to the J-League that, some would say unjustly, punished the club by all accounts for following the advice of the league's own match commissioner, and to those who doubted the team would be able to offer an attacking threat without Ishmaila. Conversely, for Takeyoshi Emma and Gifu, coming out of summer training with such a defeat must be a blow to the squad's confidence. With 6 losses in 15 games, are they promotion challengers or also-rans? Meanwhile, the teams who alongside Gifu occupied the top 3 placings at start of play, Toyama and Kumamoto, both earned 2-1 victories to recommence their seasons in a manner that was low-key but effective. Centre-back Makoto Rindo gave Toyama the lead at home to Fujieda Mai FC on 18 minutes as he outfought Ryosuke Hisadomi to get his head to Nobuyuki Shina's lofted free kick. Mai FC pulled level 10 minutes later when Shohei Kawakami's cutback from the right-hand side was converted by veteran midfielder Jun Suzuki. After further chances at both ends, Katane took the points when, in the 64th minute, Shunta Takahashi got on the end of a through ball by fellow substitute Hiroya Sueki. Outrushing keeper Takuya Sugimoto was left in no man's land as the alert Takahashi finished smartly for his 4th of the season. And Kumamoto went in front in the 14th minute at bottom-placed Gainare Tottori when unmarked Shun Ito finished from close range after Ken Tajiri parried a shot straight to him. Soon after half-time, the home side drew level under similar circumstances. Daichi Ishikawa, the happy recipient of a ball pushed away by stand-in Rawaso keeper Kei Uchiyama. The winner came just after the hour when Naohiro Sugiyama was hauled down in the area by Hayate Sugi and got up to convert the spot kick himself. Straightforward victories for Kumamoto and Toyama they may have been, but there was drama in the derby between Iwate Gurugia Morioka and Vanrari Hachinohe, both, like their Tohoku neighbours Fukushima, looking to build on unexpected success in the first half of the season. Iwate's new goalkeeper, 18-year-old Taishi Brandon Nozawa, conceded within 90 seconds of the kickoff in his first ever J-League game as a ricocheting ball struck Hachinohe's Yoshiki Oka and went over the line. The away side's lead lasted barely 90 seconds more, their defender Shuya Akamatsu flattening Yuki Shikama to concede a penalty, hammered into the roof of the net by Han Yong-te. Sporting a Kashiwa Reysol-style yellow and black summer kit, Gurugia went close to taking the lead on a couple of occasions, but 5 minutes into the second half, Vanrare were back in front, Kazuki Sato floating in a corner, Nozawa coming out for the ball and getting nowhere near it, and Akamatsu heading home to joyful celebrations among his teammates. Again, though, they couldn't hold on to their advantage as Iwate pulled level, this time in controversial circumstances. Taisuke Nakamura's far post tap-in of a header from Shota Yomesaka was initially ruled out for offside, but then was deemed valid following a consultation between referee Kenshi Uda and his hapless assistant. Iwate finally went in front 11 minutes from time when substitute Paul Bismarck Tabinas surged down the right-hand side and fed it into the box for Toi Kagami. His control looked careless, but the Hachinohe defence were unable to mop up and Kagami drove home from 10 yards. Final score, Iwate 3, Hachinohe 2. In the other Saturday match at Kamatamare Sanuki, Kagoshima United began with their two big summer signings, Hiroki Akiyama and Raisei Shimazu, on the bench. But Henry Osamu Ioha made an injury-delayed debut in the centre of the defence, and Ioha, up in the Sanuki area, played a significant part in his team's opening goal, acting as the wall in a 1-2 to set up Junki Goryo for an angled drive past homekeeper Takiya Takahashi in the 13th minute. Goryo was caught napping as the Noodle Boys drew level 7 minutes before half-time, failing to track the run of Atsuki Satsukawa, who converted Ikki Kawasaki's cross at the far post. Cue clearly exasperated expressions in Goryo's direction from across the Kagoshima defence. 10 minutes from time, though, captain Kazuya Tsunamori poked substitute Akiyama's low cross over the line from close range to give Kagoshima a 2-1 win. Round 16 finished with two further games on Sunday, the highlight being resurgent AC Nagano Parseiro's trip to a Tegevajaro Miyazaki side that came into the break on a downwards trajectory. It was Nagano who went in front in the 16th minute, Masaki Miyasaka's ambitious long-range effort having enough legs on it to bounce past Shunsuke Ueda and inside the post. Playing their typically neat football, Miyazaki had chances to equalise but were always just off target with the finish, and Nagano confirmed the win 4 minutes from the end when Yuki Morikawa and Shuto Kamara combined on the right-hand side to set up Takuma Mizutani for a near-post finish. Final score, Miyazaki 0, Nagano 2. Further disappointment for Tegevajaro, but another sign that Parseiro may be able to pull themselves into immediate contention. Immediate contention isn't a phrase that can be used about the teams in the last fixture, at least not without being unkind. But in fairness, FC Imabari and Azul Claro Numazu served up a competitive match full of near misses if not actual goals. The result may have been different if one of those chances had fallen to absent striker Valdemar rather than Imabari's rookie centre-back Tomoya Ando, but even with Numazu forward Ryo Watanabe being red-carded with more than half an hour to play, Keiichiro Nuno's side couldn't make the breakthrough and it ended Imabari 0, Numazu 0. The team with a bye this week were YSCC Yokohama. So what does all this mean for the current league standings? Those 2-1 wins pay off as Toyama lead the way with 29 points and Kumamoto climb to second with 27. Then it's Fukushima with 26, Iwate and Gifu both with 25. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Fujieda with 14 points, Sanuki with 13, Imabari 12 and Tottori 11. To finish with a quick look ahead to the matches in round 17, there are three games on Saturday the 4th of September. Can Gifu bounce back from their heavy defeat in round 16 as they go to YSCC? Hachinohe will hope to draw on their good home record as they host Miyazaki, and Fujieda are at home to Sanuki, fourth bottom against third bottom. Then on Sunday the 5th, leaders Toyama have a decent opportunity to pick up points as they go to Numazu. Second place Kumamoto will hope for only their second home win of the season as Imabari visit the Egao Kenko Stadium. Fukushima are at home to rock bottom Tottori, and there's a potential thriller at Nagano where Iwate are the visitors. The team with a bye in round 17 are Kagoshima. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.